Welcome to KGVM's newest radio show, Spirit of the Valley. I'm your host, Katie Michael Sanchez. This show invites people from the Gallatin Valley to sit down with me and talk about faith and spirituality. When I'm not on the radio, I work as a healthcare chaplain and interfaith spiritual director. I am fascinated by all the ways that people engage with spirituality and religion. In my work as a chaplain and spiritual director, I have the honor to be part of the tender conversations about what brings hope and meaning to life, and to be present to folks as they wrestle with hard questions. I hope that this radio show can offer a glimpse into the diversity of beliefs in the valley and the ups and downs of being spiritual people. For more information about me, your host, you can find me online at www.whatyouseeksd.com. And with any questions or comments about this show, you can reach me at whatyouseeksd@gmail.com. Due to the pandemic, this interview was recorded over video chat. Today's guest is a colleague of mine, Tim Spring. Timothy Spring has lived in Bozeman since 2002. A native of Pennsylvania, he enjoys the outdoors and cultural opportunities of this area. He and his spouse are the parents of two adult daughters and grandparents of a 7-year-old and 10-month-old. He works in the area of spiritual health for Bozeman Health in hospital and hospice settings. Tim, thanks so much for being here today. Let's jump in.
What was growing up like for you? What was your sort of foundational experience with religion and God?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small rural town in Pennsylvania and grew up in the Lutheran Church, was baptized there and confirmed, and so kind of a traditional mainline Protestant kind of experience. My parents, we didn't go to worship that often. We were involved with the Sunday school and all that. But my grandparents, my father's parents, went to worship every Sunday. And so I started going with them, and I was really attracted to worship, to the music, to the ritual, the words. I still remember on Sundays when there was communion, though it was Virginia Dare wine, because they had bottles in the refrigerator in the churches where our Sunday school class was. Mm-hmm. But you would walk in and you could smell, because it wasn't communion every Sunday then, and you could just smell the wine, you know, kind of wafting through the sanctuary. Uh-huh. And these little, the communion, they use these little pressed wafers that, you know, it was just different. So the kind of sensory experience, I guess, and, you know, candles and color and all of that. So that was an important part of just, it felt like something special was happening, you know, out of, and the leaders, of worship leaders wore, you know, vestments, robes. And so as I grew up, I then had a chance to do, you know, acolyting, you know, lighting candles and reading. And so participating in that. But another part was just when I was 10, we moved outside of town in an area that it was a kind of a fledgling development. There were maybe half a dozen houses, but the rest of it were fields that were undeveloped. And so there was a pond and trees and open fields. And I would spend days after school, you know, just afternoons kind of exploring all of that. And so that also was an important part of experiencing God. I think that's the one thing that for me, that God wasn't then and isn't now limited to, you know, kind of that, you know, an hour on Sunday morning or just when I'm in prayer or just in nature, but kind of everything and people too, experiencing God and the people that I meet and the kind of sacred, I would say sacred with animals or with people or in nature, thunderstorms, snow, the changing seasons, and just as observing and somehow recognizing a connection that I was a part of all of that. And
this was in Pennsylvania, is that right?
Pennsylvania, right.
Yeah.
So rural Pennsylvania. So a lot of farming in the area and kind of small town. You know, my parents grew up, my mother had been raised in a Presbyterian church and my father Lutheran. God has always been, I guess I've seen, always seen God. It's hard to think about, okay, what did I think about God when I was 5 years old? I just remember you'd get these little, you know, kind of schlocky things in school for gifts. And there was a little picture of a very Caucasian Jesus.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Solomon, it's a really famous, they kind of color the skin a little bit, but it was a picture and then it kind of like a star. And so and then it glowed at night. So I had it on my wall in my bedroom. So this kind of this, like an icon kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the visual, the visual also was important for me, as well as the aural, the words. Words are really, I love language. And so I think all of that and the music. So it was just kind of an overall experience of that. I suppose maybe I was about 10 when I thought, maybe I'd like to be like a leader, a pastor or something. Uh-huh. But there were lots of other things I was interested in. I enjoyed, I thought for a while I might want to be an architect or like civil engineer, you know, kind of building, designing things.
Uh-huh.
And, or, you know, writer and so on. So I had lots of interests. I think as I grew up and in college, I had an opportunity to have some other experiences with Christian communities.
So did you go to college to study religion, or was it just like that was kind of in the back of your mind?
No,
and you were like, I'm going to do this other stuff.
I can say that I did not take a single religious studies course as an undergraduate.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. But you lived in a religious community, so that was, you know.
Yeah.
Got your religion there.
I did. So I went to college thinking, well, maybe engineering. I also had thought of being a doctor. Because of working, I think the working with people, but also the just helping people, I think. And kind of the healing, that part. And so, because I liked science, I liked math. So the first couple of years in college, I took, you know, kind of the math courses and the science courses that would set me up to do, you know, engineering or to go more in a science direction. But in that first year, it just kind of began to discern more that I would like to explore more what it would be to be, you know, a pastor. I also thought I might like to do teaching in a university setting, because I really loved the whole kind of university experience and just this community of learning. And I mean, that's kind of idealized, but folks who, you know, you could take a Shakespeare course, you could study about the history of communism, you could take a philosophy course. I took an astronomy course just for the heck of it, because I've always been interested also in like the stars and the universe and all of that. And so it was an astronomy course, and we had a lab that met at night, so we got to use when the night was clear, the telescopes. And so, yeah, just my parents both were high school graduates, but I was the first in my family to go to college. So my parents were supportive. We didn't have a lot of books around when I was growing up, some. But I remember they purchased, like, the World Book Encyclopedia set. And I remember this kind of vividly. So it arrived like on a Saturday. My family, I have one sister, and so my parents and my sister were grocery shopping or something, and I was at home and I was supposed to mow the lawn. And so, but like this World Book Encyclopedia set arrived, and so I opened it immediately and just spent, I don't know, a couple of hours in the morning just like diving into it. And then my parents got home and the yard was mowed, and I said, well, I've always had a love of learning, and I think that the university, and I don't think I idealized, but that, and universities have changed, but this idea that there's this community that's dedicated to learning, to exploring, was really attractive.
And well, also, and I love that story about the encyclopedias too, because it's like the pre-internet days. That like we had such a, it was like access to information like that was so much more limited, right? So you're like really hang on to those sort of like resources.
right. So I think, you know, and I think my parents, you know, recognized that I had an interest in that. So I remember they, like for a couple of Christmases, different Christmases, I got like a, I was under 10, but I got like a roll, this antique roll top desk. That was mine. And then when I got older, they had, you know, some crafts person built this a desk. And so kind of recognized, I mean, I enjoyed drawing and, you know, kind of writing and just playing. I enjoyed things. When we moved, there weren't many. There was like one neighbor that was my age, and he lived kind of over the hill. And so a lot of those afternoons after school were spent on my own, kind of exploring and things. And that was okay to do that. I mean, I've always been comfortable doing things by myself, but also I love being with people and conversation and hearing stories. And so I think in terms of religion, I mean, it's hard to categorize. Okay, so what I'd say I'm Christian. I would say identify with the Lutheran kind of expression of that, which I see as a reforming movement within the broader church. But I never felt limited to just kind of Lutheran. There's a whole, I'm drawn to Eastern Orthodox because of the icons, I think, the art.
They have a lot of the sort of, I'm not going to find the right word, but the accoutrements, you know, like you were talking about from your childhood, that high church, you know, the outfits and the, you know.
Sometimes
the incense.
Yeah, sometimes the phrase is, you know, bells and smells, which.
Yes.
Yeah, like, in, I remember the first time I worshiped someone, there was like incense, and I thought, oh, this is really cool. I don't know, again, that kind of the whole body experience. And Lutherans, it's a tradition where there are kind of, people sometimes make fun, kind of gymnastics during, I mean, you stand, you sit, we kneeled for some things in the congregation I grew up in. And so all of that, but somehow, you know, involving your whole body in the experience, including, you know, your body, but there's visual, there's also oral, the hearing, and but also smell and taste.
Yeah.
All of that, that it's because we, I mean, we're embodied creatures. And so the spiritual for me has never been kind of a disembodied experience. There's it's always been grounded in creation. And though I'm very much attracted to writers who be considered mystics, St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, and also people who maybe are considered on the margins of Christian, like Pierre de Chardin, who was a Catholic scientist, but also a Jesuit priest, and kind of wanted to explore how religion and evolution came together, Christianity, and the church didn't exactly like his thinking, and so they sent him to China, to, you know, remote China, because they thought, well, that will keep him kind of out of. But he continued to write and to explore and to think. And another person, Simone Weil, the French, a woman who had her own peculiarities in terms of, but identified very strongly. You know, she was a philosophy professor and took time off and worked in a factory because she wanted to identify with the workers. And no one knows if she was ever really baptized. She may not have been, but she said one thing about kind of remaining outside. She had, if you've ever read her conversion story, there was a poem by George Herbert, who was an English writer, and it's entitled The Guest or The Table. But it's this kind of mystical poem about being invited to sit down with Jesus, and the person, the guest, is saying, oh, I'm not worthy, and just encourage her. She memorized that poem and just kind of meditated on it. And one day she just had this experience of communion, if you will, with Jesus. And that was kind of her conversion. But she also felt she remained kind of outside of the church. She said, it's paraphrasing, for those things and those people who remain outside. And so I guess for me, I've always been cognizant of that not everybody is, that the church is often, can often become kind of a club and exclusive. It's my experience of God is not that at all. And, you know, reading Jesus, you know, the accounts in the Gospels, which of course aren't historical, you know, newspaper accounts, but always reaching out beyond the margins. And his disciples are always saying, oh, you know, what are you paying attention to? You know, that blind person or that woman, or, but continue to reach out beyond. And so I guess I see that God is love, that at the center of the universe, that love is what's there. And there are all kinds of terrible things that happen, that we're human beings can be so hurtful, and the violence, but there's also just wonderful things that people do. You think of organizations that welcome refugees, or Doctors Without Borders, where people are sacrificing and giving of themselves to care for others, and in these days, caring about creation and climate change, that it's not just about. So I think in the best thing for me, my faith takes me beyond myself, and be a better, a fuller human being, and to care about others. And, you know, it's something that's a continual, you know, in terms of like spiritual practice. There are two things that I, most mornings, that it's a group, the Moravians, who do, they just send out daily. It's just one verse of scripture from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament. They kind of pair them, and then a little prayer. And that's kind of all. And then there's another group that comes from kind of the Anabaptist tradition in Christianity, a Bruderhof. People, they live in community, intentional community, and they send out, they call it the Daily Dig. And it's just a brief, like, paragraph or something from different writers. It could be Simone Weil, it could be a secular writer, it could be just anyone. It's just kind of something that's thought-provoking. And so I like to start the day kind of with that as a way to launch. And then just kind of time, silence, quiet, and try to have a practice of gratitude in the morning, and then throughout the day, and then in the evening. Just because it's so easy to kind of get caught up in, you know, what's wrong, but also to recognize, because I think if we only focus on kind of what's wrong and how terrible everything is, then it can be paralyzing in terms of taking any action to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we find things that inspire us, that enliven us, that, that cause us to think or to consider another point of view, then we can be inspired and empowered to work for change and to reach out and be there for other people. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what I know of your ministry that you've shared with me, you know, you were saying kind of being on the margins, that you had your ministry in the coal country in Appalachia, and then even now with hospice and the hospital, you know, people who are sick and dying, and I mean, it seems like that's really showed up in the work that you do.
Mm. I think that's true, and I guess for me, there's no place in the world and the universe that God isn't present.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so, like when a tragedy happens, so I don't, for me, God isn't, when someone becomes ill or something, it's God is not punishing
mm-hmm.
them. It's not a punishment. If anything, you know, I think of, you know, our work with couples who lose a child, you know, fetal demise, and that's maybe the worst day in their life, but to be, for someone to be there, and there's often there are no words to say, but to be present,
right?
And I, and, you know, not to try to make meaning, because I think it's something I need to process, but. And I hate when people say, oh, God needed an angel or a flower for
uh-huh.
And it's just so, they may, you know, find that in terms of their understanding of reality and things that can bring comfort. But I could never say something like that to someone. First, yeah. I don't believe in myself, but then, if anything, I think, when something like that happens, that God is the first to shed a tear, and for me that's what kind of Jesus, the incarnation, God, in a sense entering into evolutionary, choosing to enter into the evolutionary process and to be limited by the human condition, to experience hunger, thirst,
mm-hmm.
Anger, everything, that somehow God, who in Christian thought is the creator of the universe, but didn't kind of set things up and then, you know, go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
that God is intimately involved and sustaining. And that there's no place that's beyond God's reach. And this, I think, especially those places. When I was in college, there was a Baptist group in the area and some students were involved, and they were visiting a maximum security prison outside of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would go like once a month, and it just seemed like that was an important place to be. People who have been locked away, and were the one man I worked with was in for second degree murder. It was kind of a crime of passion, I remember. And but that no one is defined by the worst thing that they've done. That that each person has dignity and value. So
you kind of had this journey, like you had started to share some about, you know, being in college, and you didn't take any religious studies classes, but then did make your way eventually into this ministry. And I mean, I just love this idea of all these different sources that you were drawing from, you know, not just like the quote religious Lutheran story of how God is, but through the astronomy class and the relationship with other people and the service work. You know, interfaith is something you're involved with here in the Gallatin Valley. If you want to kind of speak to some of that interfaith experience, whether here locally or, you know, over those years as you were developing. Yeah.
So I think to start here in Bozeman. So I came to Bozeman to do campus ministry at Montana State, and we have an ecumenical center, which is near campus, and we have housing for 18 students. And the only requirement to live there was that the person was a student at MSU. So they didn't have to be a member of one of the sponsoring denominations. They didn't have to be Christian. They didn't have to be American. So we had a lot of international students who lived there with us. And so we had, you know, Muslim students from Saudi Arabia, students from India who were Hindu, a student from Sri Lanka who was Buddhist, and folks from the Church Universal and Triumphant, some folks. Mm-hmm. And so the intention was not to convert people, but to enter into dialogue with them and to provide a safe space for people to live. And I've always, so I think there's a thinker, Christer Stendahl, who talked a lot about interfaith relationships, and he had kind of three rules for interfaith engagement. One is don't compare your best with their worst. In other words, each of our traditions has terrible things that we've done. Well, most. So don't compare your best with their worst. If you want to know about a religion, talk to a practitioner. So if I want to know about Buddhism, I can read about it, but really a good way is to enter into conversation with someone who practices Buddhism. And everyone has their own personal take on even, you know, Islam or Christianity, but to learn from the actual people. And the third is to practice, he called it holy envy, that to find something in the other's tradition that you really appreciate or admire or envy. And so I've tried to use those kind of as I add dialogue with people and learn. And I'm just naturally curious. And so I don't believe, and I don't pretend to have all of the answers, that I'm alone with truth.